Hello, this is Brian Wampler with another episode of the Chasing Tone Podcast, the podcast about guitars, amps, effects, as well as a healthy dose of interesting off-topic discussions. As always, joining me today again is Blake Weiland, host of the Tone Mob Podcast, an entrepreneur and effects pedal junkie, as well as Richard Oliver, Wampler's own man of many hats, longtime tone chaser, and himself a digital entrepreneur. Though today we have a very, very special guest again, Philip Carter from the 41 Watt Podcast.
41?
I mean the 40 Watt Podcast.
Are you trying to one-up me now, Brian? Is that what this is?
41 Watt Podcast. Oh, man.
Yeah.
We're doing it.
We are. No, mm-hmm. The last time I talked to Philip, like in person, we were on his podcast. Richard and I, actually. And I would probably say it was probably his best podcast. I'm being humble here, but
it was a solid episode. But you know, Blake has also been on the podcast, and it was pretty solid. So
no, I'd have to say ours was better than Blake's. I listened to that one too.
You don't even remember it, Brian. What are you talking about?
Brian doesn't even remember yesterday, Blake.
I was going to say that's not a bad thing. I don't recall what I was doing 10 minutes ago.
Brian's also forgetting that we technically talked in person at NAMM. So
yeah, I remember.
Brian has complete. NAMM.
That was like 5 years ago.
That's a guess, Brian. Has complete NAMM face disremembrance. Like he will just talk to everybody he sees and he'll be nice to them, but forget everything the minute he walks out of the building. Mm-hmm. Like he has to be like taken to a car because otherwise he forgets how to walk. So,
well, yeah, this is a true story. So my wife, Amanda, is usually the one, like at the end of the day, she's like, write this down. You talked to this person. They said this, you promised this, you would, you know, mm-hmm. Because if it wasn't for her, I would just literally be like a cat chasing its own tail just continuously, just, you know, never doing, always being busy, but never really getting anywhere, you know?
Oh, that is kind of the NAMM way, though. Like,
yeah.
It's always like that. Every time I go, I'm just like, I leave, I'm like, there's like one moment that I'll remember. Like, man, that was cool. And usually it's after NAMM. It's like, oh, yeah, I went to that cool, you know, Fender thing or whatever. It's like, I'll remember that. But like, I don't remember anything we talked about on the show floor at all. I remember seeing a lot of friends. It's such a blur. I'm shocked. Like I know we've talked about NAMM a lot on this show and how I'm fairly pessimistic on the event in general, even in the before times as far as ROI for companies. But I do routinely go, man, I kind of miss it. You know, I miss seeing everybody.
There's good things and bad things. Yeah, there's good things and bad things about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It is definitely one thing you gotta give it to them. It's unlike anything else, you mm-hmm. know. It's bananas when it was in its prime. I don't know if it'll ever get back to that. But
that's a good question. We'll ever get back to what it once was. Are you going to NAMM later this year? Now that they're moving it to summer,
I haven't decided yet. I know we're not displaying Stringjoy's not displaying, but Scott and I have talked about going out there and just kind of seeing. And, mm-hmm. you know, getting a vibe check, as the kids say.
Yeah.
But I'm still not sure. I don't know. I'm really not sure about it. It's far enough away that I think I can still think about it and see how I'm feeling at the time, you know.
What about you, Philip? You going?
You know, I'm thinking about it. It's just that, you know, it's really expensive to get from Mississippi to California in the dead heat of summer for a podcast that technically doesn't make me money. So it's like, you know, it's
hey,
all
we have
loss.
One of those. Oh.
Hold on, come on. You've got to be a podcast millionaire like the rest of us, all right?
Right, yeah, rolling in those ones.
I'm raking in so many exposure bucks.
Well, right now we are slicing you into NFTs, which we're going to sell in a giant NFT Ponzi scheme that Brian's been thinking of. So don't worry about it, dude. Soon you'll have more NFTs than you'll ever be able to sell. And that's
no, Richard, you're not going to sell my nice freaking truck.
Well, no, that's fair. That is fair.
Yeah, I couldn't think of a good acronym there, Blake, that didn't have the F that I couldn't use in polite company. So,
is this polite company joining us?
This is polite company?
Blake's kind of like the scout dad. He always takes what Richard and I say and just kind of polishes it over and smooths it over and makes it nice. And we do something. When we say something, he's like, no.
You settle down. And then the mics go off, and I'm like, all right, guys, not that.
I mean, it's it is directly related to Blake's blood sugar level and the amount of pizza that is flowing through his system at any one time. If he's low on pepperoni, forget about it. You're going to get the cuss words. But if his pepperoni levels are at, you know, 90%, then you're just going to get happy, mellow Blake.
Yeah, and I haven't had any pizza since last night, so watch out.
Oh, we're in so much trouble.
Jeez.
So what's going on then?
No, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, what's going on? What's happening?
Oh,
what's
I was just going to say, lastly, the NAMM thing. I've never been to the big NAMM, so I've only been to summer post-COVID NAMM. So I've never seen the big show.
Oh, wow.
I mean, I'm just trying to change the subject because I've never been to a NAMM. And like every time these guys discuss NAMM for like 5 or 10 minutes, I'm sat here twiddling my thumbs, like trying to think about jokes about the insurance industry shows I've been to. And I've run out, quite frankly, Philip. So,
well, I mean, that's what YouTube's for. You could always just watch a bunch of YouTube videos about NAMM.
It's just the same as being there.
Just like watch product videos. But tell me, you went then, Philip, as like a few years back as a podcaster. How did you find your NAMM experience as a kind of relative outsider to the gear kind of industry, I suppose, when you first went?
It was a weird experience. So last year, I went last year in Nashville. That was right. Last year, right?
I think so.
Yeah, they're all the same to me now. 2020 something. So I went, actually stayed in a house with a bunch of other podcaster YouTubers. Had the guys from the Effects Loop. I was with Ryan from 60 Cycle Hum.
A bunch of us.
A bunch of us are crashing. Oh yeah, we recorded a completely unlistenable episode of the podcast wrapping up NAMM. You know, 6-7 folks just sitting around all talking over each other. It was complete chaos. NAMM itself was relatively.
I was in one of those too.
One time. I've heard about that one. It never got aired. So
no, thanks, no, Ryan.
Was it like that vulgar or what?
It was pretty.
Pretty rough.
It was pretty rough.
Ryan go full Joe Rogan? Did people threaten to cancel themselves if Ryan was on it? Is that what you're telling us?
They probably would have. Let's put it that way. Yeah,
no, that's fair enough.
Yeah. I've only heard tales. So, but yeah, it was interesting. The only thing I have to relate it to, I've never even been to a guitar show. Like, I don't know that there is a guitar show in Mississippi at all. This is so lame. Library conferences are the only thing I could relate it to.
Now we're talking. Now this is my language.
I think it's a little different than a library conference.
It's a little different. It is. It's not that much louder though, if I'm really honest, because some of the big library conferences are like 30,000-40,000 people, so they get pretty big. But
I thought there was no talking in the library.
Stop your stereotypes.
Blessed are the librarians. We will not have any kind of naysaying to the librarianship of this honorable gentleman that joins
us
today.
How much leather is at the librarian conference versus NAMM? I'm curious.
Oh, that's a good question. It depends on the booth you go to.
Ooh, maybe we'll go to the librarian conference.
Yeah.
Whatever you are thinking right now, it is 100%. It is not that. It is the, okay. It is unlike anything you, like I used to work in bars before I got into libraries, right? I was in bar and restaurant management, and you work in that long enough, you feel like you start to know the drinking professions, right?
Yep.
You see the groups come in, you're like, insurance people can drink. You know who can drink more?
Oh yes.
Educators. You know who drinks more than them? Librarians. Bankers. Oh, bankers. But then I got into librarians, and yeah, they're not quite bankers, but they drink more than teachers do. So it's an interesting experience.
All that pent up things for not being able to talk all day, you know?
Pent up energy.
Yeah, too I'd much, be curious to compare the library a conference to the NAMM show in alcohol consumption. That would be interesting because, I mean, musicians, I think everybody, I mean, I think we've earned our reputation for a reason, but what if there's like a secret amongst librarians, you know, they're keeping a flask tucked away in a book with a cutout, you know, or something. I don't know. Maybe there's something going on I don't know about.
It's an interesting experience. But yeah, that was my only thing I could relate it to. NAMM is its own thing. I'd like to see you know, get to the big one. We'll see what it's, if it ever actually is a big one again. That's the real question. If it's going to be a big trade show again, or as we're starting to see, I think there are more and more regional shows might pop up and very specific, not the giant entire music industry all in one place.
We'll be right back.
Is real music dying? What even is real music, and who are we to judge that? Well, my father is a lifelong musician, and together we've been making music for over a decade. In our new podcast, we dare to ask the urgent, the weird, and the deep questions, and we have a lot of wild stories to tell. No matter what genres you enjoy, whether you're a musician, a producer, or a listener, we invite you to discover unconventional perspectives on music. So tune in, and go follow Mad Makings of Music wherever you listen to podcasts.
That's kind of what I've been thinking the trend will be, whether it's like NAMM breaking out and having like the band and orchestra one over here and the, you know, the guitar one over here. And, the, you know, I could kind of see that happening, and that would make a lot of sense. And I also wonder if NAMM will ever lift the ban of selling on the show floor, because one thing I've heard from a lot of the vendors going to like Austin Guitar Show and stuff like that, I think that's the name of it. Which was a pretty big show.
Several people
I know that displayed at that one, they're allowed to sell. So they actually made money at the show instead of lost, you know, instead of it just being a big expense. They were able to cover some of their costs or actually even profit from doing the show. And that's a total game changer. I understand why NAMM doesn't do that in a traditional sense or hasn't done that. But I wonder if that's something they need to consider in order to get folks back. What do you think, Brian?
That's some really good points. I mean, I think to me, I generally don't like authority by nature. And so to have like that many rules over me, I really just want to make a booth with a big middle finger and just act like it's normal.
Right.
You know? But, you know, that's not very good for business, come to think of it.
It was kind of what PV did at Summer NAMM, though. Like, sort of.
They had, like, a chair and a small table.
Yes. Like, oh, you're going to charge us more for what was it? For walking the floor? Oh, but it's cheaper to just buy a booth and have no one in it?
Yeah.
Okay, that's what we'll do then. And Walrus did the same thing. It was a little less obvious than PV's. PV's was definitely a giant.
PV was definitely, like, yeah.
Yeah.
Like,
okay.
It was interesting to see there were several booths where it looked like somebody just set, like the Gretsch booth was like a snare drum and a guitar and no one there. Like that was it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. Wasn't it they upped it to like $500 for a non-display vendor or something like that? I don't remember. They upped the price suddenly for people who weren't displaying to walk the floor. And so a lot of brands that were sending multiple people were like, it's cheaper just to get a booth and have nothing in it. So... yeah.
So, Philip, I have to ask you, as you know, you and I are both, I'm assuming, it seems like you're into TikTok as much as I am.
Yeah.
I see, like, every day.
Well, I really like TikTok. It's been a lot of fun. I made a goal. So when I started the podcast, I did not intend it to be what it is now, like the interview format. I'd never really intended for that, but it happened. I had someone on the podcast and I realized, oh my God, this is so much easier when there's someone else to do most of the talking. So I was like, let's do that. Well, so I went through last year. I put out, I think I had 47 episodes last year on the podcast. At some point, I decided to do it on YouTube as well. And so this year I decided, all right, if I'm going to be serious about this, I've got to actually put out content. And like, I'm putting out content on YouTube, I'm putting out content on Instagram. And I was like, okay, Philip, you're going to have to do TikTok. You've got to figure this out. And so really all I've done is started copying what other people are doing, and it's working.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Your channels, I mentioned last week, I want to make like a blog post that has like all my favorite guitar related TikTok channels. And yours is definitely one of them. But yeah, there's times that you do. Well, I've actually done duets with you a little bit where just, you know, just trying to interact with the community a little bit. But it's good stuff, man.
I think that's my favorite part is the fact that there can be comments and then you can just video react to the comment instead of just, because I don't want to deep dive into the comments commenting. Like I don't do it. I know everybody else is like, oh, you got to read all the comments on like the most outrageous junk out there. I don't want to read the comments. I don't want to write in the comments. I want to just see the thing and move on. And so,
sorry, I'm just going to have to dial this back a little bit. Firstly, congratulations on 13 minutes of NAMM coverage. You know, that's a record for this show. Now, Brian, when you say duets, I'm thinking like Marvin Gaye, kind of Tammy Wynette, maybe. I don't know.
I mean, sort of, but we weren't singing. And
What kind of duets? The next duet you do with Philip, if you're not singing, I'm unfriending you on every platform, Brian.
Dibs on the share part. That's all I'm saying.
You'd make a great share, Brian.
I mean, there's different things you can do it. You can stitch or you can duet. With duets, I mean, it seems to be like a lot of people who, like I did with Philip, like he had his video and it's basically me just agreeing with him and laughing at what he said. So it was like, that's literally all it was. Other people will, you know, go a little farther and do something a little more creative than that. A stitch would be more like you could do. It's more like a call to action thing. So a person says something.
I see the kids. I know what they're up to. Don't worry, Brian. You don't have to translate for us old men. We get it. We've got children.
Well, some of our listeners may not understand though.
Yeah.
They may like still think that it's just an app full of dancing 13-year-old girls or something.
I mean, it is.
It's
watching. If you watch that stuff, it'll show that to you.
Exactly.
Mine does not look like that. Mine's all music and religion stuff.
Utter lies.
mine is all music. What is it all now? It's like all music. It's really, really heavy music now. And like woodworking. I don't know why. Apparently, I watched a lot of woodworking.
Yours to
apparently,
you to watched Brian's. Someone. Yeah. I mean, like heavy music and woodworking is way better than guitars and religion. I mean, where's the religion come from, Brian? Have you been watching a lot of religious TikTok?
This is the nerdy side of me. I study textual criticism. Textual criticism.
Right, yeah. Okay. Yeah. I'm sorry I started this list.
So that's
genie back in the bottle? Is it possible?
It's fascinating to me to figure out. I've always had this goal ever since. Okay, so there's this big movement called deconstructionalism within Christianity, okay? And this was something I went through probably 15 years ago. Where I like said my life is a lie and I'm like everything I thought I believed is completely wrong, but what is the truth is what I wanted to know. And that started me down a road of reading about, well, what does this word actually mean? What did it mean in context?
Oh, gee, from an
which
American
changes
perspective,
the entire meaning of the Bible.
Oh, that's going to be difficult because, well, I mean, religion is a subject that is best approached by not approaching it at all. So,
well, yeah, I'm not going to say my viewpoints. I'm just saying I'm explaining how I arrived at
which I appreciate. But have you found the meaning to life yet? Is it 42?
I'm closer than I was 15 years ago. It seems to be like the meaning of life is
definitely closer to 42 than you were 15 years ago. But
I guess.
I love the math. Like carry the one.
So A divided by B equals.
I can't get TikTok to give me what I like. It gives me good. It's doing better. It's giving me more guitar stuff. But I still get this stupid financial advice. That's bad financial advice.
I get that every now and then.
Like,
You can also click not interested on it.
I'm going to shoot off
very rapidly into the weeds on this one. But did either of you watch the video I shared about NFTs and the sort of cryptocurrency?
I watched about 15 minutes of it. It was like a two
long.
And a half.
Yeah, yeah. It's really long. It's called Line Goes Up. It's fascinating. I recommend it to anybody. And thanks to the listener who actually sent it over to me. But I'm not going to say much. It totally affirms my own beliefs that mm-hmm. this is just a massive casino for mm-hmm. the rich and
right,
brain
yeah.
dying. And I mean, it's going to have huge consequences for us Joe averages who are putting our own like college funds into it. And one day that rug is going to be pulled out and we're all going to realize that buying 16 pixels of an ape was really a stupid thing to do.
So, I mean, it's going to be just like the dot-com crash.
Yeah, it's literally just the same thing. Yeah.
It's going to be worse. The dot-com crash was predicated on companies that did things, but maybe my company may have been part of the dot-com crash, by the way. they were companies that had massive valuations and people went, actually, wait a minute, they're not worth that. But they still had value in them. They're companies. There is no value in pixels.
There's no value in the US dollar either, but we all say that it has value for some reason.
I hear you, but it's a no worse mechanism for exchanging value than cryptocurrency. So cryptocurrency by default is not a better system for exchanging value than the US dollar or gold or stones or whatever you want to use. Either way, it's just the rich like manipulating the system to benefit them greater than the rest of us.
Sounds like the regular market.
Yeah, it does. It sounds like the regular market entirely
is regulated at least by bodies that look to make sure that things happen that
Richard,
don't affect.
You think that they actually care?
No, I don't. I mean, as I say, our company was literally part of the first dot-com boom. Over here, there was a big company called lastminute.com, which I think was the one that really triggered it. We were like mentioned in the same breath as them all the time. So I totally hear you. The markets are just, you know, again, some very wealthy people, but there is regulation that at least tries to stop you and me putting money in. There's nothing stopping anybody putting whatever they want into pixels. And again, the lesson that everyone should learn is World of Warcraft. You reach a point in World of Warcraft where you don't want to buy an expensive piece of armor for actual money because you realize you are exchanging something you've worked for on-screen glory. And the sooner you realize that, the sooner you stop thinking NFTs are a good thing, right?
Yeah, NFTs are a good thing if you're the person making them right now.
Yeah. No, maybe. I mean, people are getting burnt big time because there's no liquidity necessarily.
But that's what I'm saying. If you're making them, then, you know,
so there
$5
was a chap
is better than
Ponzi
no bucks.
Who had a very similar idea about how to make money. Like, if you're the one making the money, it's great. And if 10 of your friends are also making the money, it's great. But the hundreds of thousands underneath who lose all their money, it's, you know, it's not ideal.
Basically, those people, that's basically your fault. It's pretty much because of you.
I don't doubt that there is real use for NFTs and cryptocurrencies, but I just don't think we've reached that maturity yet. Anyway,
no, I agree with that. The problem with it is
you're going to talk about NAMM for 13 minutes, you're going to get 5 minutes of me ranting about NFTs, all right?
Well, to bring it around, it sort of feels like buying and selling an air guitar. It's like, I have this air guitar, Richard, if you want to buy it, you can give me money, and you have an air guitar, but...
Is it
try to sell it again. You better find somebody else who trusts that you have an air guitar.
Yeah.
I think the problem with it is where it's similar to the dot-com bubble is that people think it's just like, well, it's in the name of that documentary you were talking about. Line goes up. They think it's going to go up forever based on nothing. That's the problem with it. It's the over-speculation and the actual function and benefit they could provide and actually be utilized in the real world is totally buried underneath the sea of overspeculation.
Yep.
And so that's why you see such a pushback against it, because people are like, no, this is nonsense. It's a pixel of a monkey. And like, that is nonsense. And that is all going to come crashing down at some point. But the actual utility, I think, will rise to the top after the crash.
I totally agree. I think there is definite use for all of these technologies. But with cryptocurrency, for example, the energy currently required to solve a cryptocurrency algorithm is way, way more than the equivalent in computing and ATM power required. So it's turned into a green nightmare for the planet because people are building these giant power-hungry crypto mining farms, and suddenly it's not something that's empowering this planet to break away from oil-based consumption. It's increasing it. So there have been some unusual things like that that we couldn't predict, I don't think, originally, and branching in weird ways.
So I'm curious. Go ahead.
Brian's got a mischievous look on his face.
Because I remember I asked Philip about his TikTok channel, and then we started talking about NFTs. So I'm like, how in the hell did we get from point A to point B?
Because of your economic channels on TikTok that you have.
Yeah, because of the bad financial advice TikTok.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. Bad financial advice.
Recall. This is new. We've got a chap with us who's got recall beyond 30 seconds.
Because this is how my brain has to function. I do it all the time. This is how my brain works. What were the three conversations I had in my head before the thing I just blurted out loud to someone that makes no sense to them? I have to figure out how to get them where I am. But yeah, the energy consumption, just to put a little bit of a bow on this a little bit, is the big issue for me. Because I think the stats I read last year were that, like, for one Ethereum transaction, to do one Ethereum transaction requires the same power that the average American household uses in 2.5 days. The Ethereum market itself uses the same amount of power as the nation of New Zealand in a year.
Which is just insane. I mean, to be fair, in New Zealand, it's just hobbits and candy. So, there isn't a huge amount of demand for modern
And that's when we saw our New Zealand stats plummet.
I love New Zealand, by the way. Home of Peter Jackson, whose finest film was definitely Bad Taste. Just going to say. But... it's this element that's really, and I think we're seeing some of that reflected in the recent downturn in crypto. You know, the stuff that I invested into when Brian recommended I should.
you got to hold, man. It'll come back. I promise.
Have you guys seen anything? I've been wondering this, and I haven't admittedly done a lot of research, but in talking about the energy consumption part of it, have we seen it compared to other things such as Facebook's server farms or Google's server farms or anything like
that's a good point.
Because I hear that complaint, you know, a lot, and it's valid. But I also wonder, like, what about just
stuff? I think that's a really good point.
Actually, like, what about server farms in general, and what about the actual cost? So, if we're gonna be in this new world where all this digital art exists, and I'm more talking about. This is just my personal taste. Not the Bored Apes or whatever, but, you know, something a little more advanced than that. Is the cost of minting, these are questions, I don't know the answer. Is the cost of minting and creating those NFTs to make it a one-of-one versus shipping physical art somewhere, is that any worse? I don't know the answer to that. In my mind, like, I know what those ships do when they're not in port, and they blow so much more black smoke when they leave port because
you
they're
make
allowed
some
to burn bunker
really
fuel.
Great points. And just, I think
what's the trade-offs, you know? That's the question.
It's a bigger problem with the sort of Facebook world is just there's just too much data being created. And I have a fix for this that Facebook utterly should do. So if you're listening, Zuckerberg, and I know your bots listen to everything, give users the ability to delete everything from a year previous. Just say, I don't want anything to be shown from, you know, 3 years ago beyond. And that way you can just wipe off all your data off Facebook in one movement. You've scraped us. You've got all the info out of us, and we don't need it, because that's what I'm doing. Every time like a memory comes up on Facebook, I'm deleting it now because I just don't want that trail there. Because, you know, 10 years ago, I was learning the platform and saying things that, frankly, now I'm embarrassed I might have said, generally not. But you know what I'm saying? For some people, that's a real issue. That loses people's jobs.
Well, see, I would actually push back a little bit because I found a picture of a prototype Velvet Fuzz. I'm actually going to send it to you. I completely forgot that was the prototype, that's what it looked like. And
nice.
So
you should have the choice.
Oh, yeah, I totally forgot.
But you should have the choice. That's more what he's saying. Like,
No, I don't have the choice. No, thanks.
And here we are creating more data to be dumped onto a server somewhere. Look at us go.
Right. I've created a lot of data this month, so... yeah, I feel that. You know, there's just stuff to track us all down later.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm just waiting for a deep fake of me saying, like, I've gone vegan. And I'll be like, no, it's not me.
The deep fake thing is a scary, scary... That's a scary future for me. That's because
really
I think I read...
Interesting.
I heard on another podcast I was listening to that said, essentially, technology is at a point now where you need about... I think they said 30 to 40 photographs of someone, and then you can create a deep fake of them.
Oh, I believe that.
Like, that's scary. Yeah, that freaks me out.
I don't like that. I don't like that at all.
Mm-hmm. Wait, you mean you don't like those little little games on Facebook where it says, post your picture and we'll show you what you look like in 10 years?
That's just building the facial recognition database. Or the ones I love where it's like, ooh, what was your first car? Yeah, give them the answers to the regular right. security questions. Do that.
And the last four digits of your security number.
Yep. People still
if you have
do
this
that.
Kind of credit card, post it and we'll give you.
Yeah. It's ridiculous the things that we're willing to just and as someone who does it, just willingly toss out there into the ether and let everyone see it or and I, it just drives me crazy when people are willing to share. There's a librarian in you.
That's
yeah, there's a line though.
The librarian,
but you've got to learn your line.
From a computer scientist point of view, I always just think there ain't enough people in the world or AI to just analyze all of it to a degree that I care. So I'll leave a trail that's just random, and I'll never put anything important up there, but I just ignore everything now. I've now made a decision this week to just ignore every phone call that comes in from a number I don't recognize, because it's never somebody asking for something good.
And I've been doing that for years.
Yeah, I know, I'm behind the curve.
I don't answer the phone. Yeah,
unless
they owe me money, I don't answer the phone.
Well, I'm
haven't been able to get a hold of you.
Look, guys, we're quite deep in. I have to bring up the big subject that literally burst through the news pipeline as we finished recording last week's episode, where we were like, not much has happened in the world of gear this week.
Right,
as we stopped, Fender released their line of budget pedals, which mm-hmm. I think is a fair term for them. The MC Hammer Time pedals.
Stop. Now, Hammer Time. Yeah, I've been pretty impressed with the Fender pedals in general. All the ones I've gotten to try awesome. I really, really like them.
How many have you tried?
Probably 5 or 6. Okay. Something like that. The bigger ones. And they've all been really, really good. The Pugilist is like very underrated I think it's because they called it a distortion, and I honestly consider it more of an overdrive. I think that's part of they're trying to figure out that side of it. It's very, very underrated dirt pedal. That one stands out for me. So I'm excited to hopefully get to try this series, because if they're even half as good at the price point they're at, then they're a great deal. So fingers crossed on it.
I was also a big fan of that series they brought out, the Treverb, and the Pinwheel were particularly good in that series as well. Mm-hmm. The Pugilist was the one I was going to bring up. That was my favorite drive in that series that they put out. But it was... Unfortunately, I think it set unrealistic expectations in the buyer's head that Fender was able of putting out good pedals, much the way Wonder Woman did for fans of DC movies. Because Fender has a little bit of a notorious history for the pedals they put out weren't great. Mm-hmm. And suddenly they put out this really good pedal series. You have to hope they've taken the lessons they learned in putting out a really good series of pedals to create a decent budget line of pedals.
I hope so. I think the same guy's behind it, if I remember correctly.
Good.
Yeah. So fingers crossed.
But can we talk about the aesthetic?
Yeah, that's what
I have some points to make about that. it's interesting that you both really like the pedals, because I've chatted to a few of our demo artists, and I won't name any names, but some of them actually thought that the pedals they got were not to the standard they expected. In fact, some of them kind of broken. I don't know whether it was some of the delays or whatever, but didn't work in the way they thought they should. So I'm keen to try them out. But yes, the aesthetics. Bri, have you been moonlighting? These look exactly like you designed them.
Well, you know, I have been known to be pretty good with the Microsoft Word skills, you know.
Like
my clip art.
Yep.
Every single one of these has been designed by taking like a Fender Classic color, applying it to the knobs, which we'll talk about in a minute. They always make me want to brush my teeth. But also they've taken the logo and just like used a font and then taken it, and like you would in Word Art on Word, they've just gone, arc this, warp this, bend this. And it really looked as if you'd done them, Bri. I was so proud
when I saw it. Top I'm like, jacks. Someone is appreciating my artistic skills.
Top Jacks, logo down the bottom. They look like they could have been some... I mean, they look like what you were trying to achieve 10 years ago.
they perfected it.
I love that you said that, Richard, because as soon as I saw them, I was like, those look like something Wampler would have designed.
I'd just like to point out that, you know, I would not have come up with those. Although I did recognize at least one of the fonts from things that we've kicked around and rejected. I'm like, is someone scanning our emails? Is someone, here are some of Wampler's rejects. That's a terrible name for them. But the knobs, what do we think of the knobs with the molded plastic Fs?
I like the knobs, but not in that application.
Clipping that.
I don't. I've said worse. Whatever.
I'm making a trap song out of that.
I think they're cool. I think the concept's cool, but I don't think they look good in that application. That's my opinion.
I think if the pedals themselves looked better, the knobs would work better. I love the idea that they've taken it's essentially the Fender amp knob. It's essentially the skirted amp knob. Put it on a pedal, shrunk it down. I'm sure I haven't seen one to scale yet. You know, I don't know what it's going to look like. There have been pedals I've bought in the past that I've thought, oh, this pedal's tiny, and it gets here and it's like 4 pedal spaces. I'm like, okay, that was unexpected.
It's in the name, Philip. Big Muff. It says right on it.
It's big. It's right there. Huge font. Yeah. But I mean, to be fair, I like the knobs. I just don't know that I like I would have just wanted the plain old skirted amp knobs. Don't you don't have to color them. You don't have to do anything
like
to them.
I didn't like the F on it.
Yeah.
Like, to me that, I don't know. To me that seems a little cheesy.
It seems like overkill I would not want to me.
Yeah, like I can't imagine ever making a pedal and putting W on each knob.
Oh, hold on, let me just scrub out these ideas. I'm with you. I think if they'd have actually done it in a slightly different way and just made the knobs plain, like Philip said, maybe a dot of color, but not the whole knob kind of skirting color. And then they could have embossed just the F down the bottom, and that would have been all they needed to do. That would have just made a much nicer pedal, but it wouldn't have gone with their weird. They've gone for that hammered effect paint, which I'm not a fan of.
Which is why I think the plain knobs would have worked better.
Definitely would have done. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But like, if they did something colored to go with the knobs or to complement the knobs on each design, that might have worked better. But the fact that they did go like very bare bones case with these fancy colorful knobs, it looks like, I don't know. Something's up.
They look like prototypes.
Yeah.
They look like prototypes.
They don't look great to me. But again, I haven't heard any and they could sound amazing because...
Yeah, I look forward to trying some.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's a really interesting space to be in because they kind of pitched at $79 to $99. So that's, you know, that's Boss territory, basically. If you're going pedal buying and you're spending that much on a pedal, I would personally be immediately looking at Boss pedals because that's what I started with. But
I thought... Honestly, I saw them with that minimalist design and immediately thought competitor for the JHS 3 series.
And
that
was
immediately what I thought.
I prefer the look of the JHS pedals.
Same.
But
I think everybody does.
some of these will be cheaper. These will be $79, I think. And that is enough to kind of get you down the next rung of the budget ladder. That's the problem with the budget world, though. It's a race to the bottom. And we know where the bottom is. It's Amazon Basics pedals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I do hope it's not like standard circuits again. You know, I mean, not that Fender's done it before, but it seems like every time I get a budget pedal, I'm like, and that's the Tube Screamer. That's the Big Muff. And not even any like heavy modifications to it. So I'm hoping that they, even though they are more of a budget series, I'm hoping they took a little more time on the design side than what most companies do in that price range.
I think everyone agrees with you, because if they are just, here's a Tube Screamer, here's a DS1 clone, here's a Rat clone.
Right.
It's just not going to be worth it. But I'm sure they've done something special. This is Fender we're talking about. But then again, Gibson did the same with the Maestro pedal. So it's interesting, though, that both Gibson and Fender, the heavyweights, have come out with pedals. They're trying to take away our dollars, Bri.
When is Paul Reed Smith going to come out with his pedal line?
I bet it happens.
That's actually a real good question.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
don't give him ideas. Don't give him ideas, Brian.
I just remember.
You have enough competitors.
I had dinner with Paul once, and he suggested some names for our pedals that was not really usable, but was interesting. Nice guy. I just, you know, I like his stuff and I like him. But it'll be. I am surprised he hasn't released a pedal on yet.
All the knobs will be bird shaped,
and come in a quilted maple box.
Yeah, exactly. These pedals are $10,000.
Oh, you can turn them with your foot because the wings come up from the knobs, so it's really mm-hmm. easy to yeah. adjust with your feet on the fly. No,
that's amazing.
Yeah, I like the Maestro revamp as well. Although I think I may or may not have heard Blake on a different podcast. Like, why didn't you come out with the one everyone wanted to start with?
That was
we know which one you did. Like, you were Maestro is known for one or two major effects, right? Like, mm-hmm. we get it. There's a fuzz and there's a phaser. Do those first and mm-hmm. then do something different. Don't tell us, oh, those are coming. Sorry, I got a little frustrated with that too, because I was ready to order a fuzz.
I was like, let's do it.
Well, I was expecting
the Maestro phaser. I'm so excited.
Yeah,
because
didn't they sue somebody for making a phaser that was it
a cease and desist.
Yeah, cease and desist. Yep.
Yeah.
To Mojo Hand.
Yeah, mm-hmm. right. Because he did a pedal that used very similar typographical elements, shall we just say.
Mm-hmm. And it was also called the Mr. O. So
I was more mysterious than you, but fair enough.
it's public. He posted it publicly.
Yeah, he posted it.
It's not a secret.
No, so I expected that first, but no, they just went with a traditional line of pedals probably made by another company.
Oh, 100%.
What? No. What? No.
What do you mean these were not lovingly crafted by hand with through-hole components in Nashville, Tennessee? By artisan
Gibsonians.
Yeah, by artisan pedal makers using only the finest organically sourced copper.
So, speaking of that, when is this episode dropping? What date?
The 9th or 10th.
The 9th or 10th? Okay, I got to show you guys something. Philip, you cannot share this.
Put it away. It shouldn't look like that, Blake.
Wait, put your pants back on.
You ready?
Blake? That shouldn't look that way. That's
I know.
See a doctor.
You guys ever see things flare up like this? Okay, ready?
No. Why is it green?
Oh, wow. My gosh.
Mm-hmm.
So just to describe exactly what Blake's telling... No, I can't say anything. Blake has to tell us.
Okay. Well, let's show you one more thing. Whoop.
That's cool. Amazing.
That is cool.
Yep. So, since this is coming out on release day, I have a pedal with Big Ear pedals that is lovingly crafted in Nashville, Tennessee, actually.
Yes.
And it is a fuzz pedal, and it is in the shape of a piece of pizza, and there's a good chance it is already taken over the internet by the time you listen to this.
It looks awesome, guys. And you're going to do incredibly well and sell out immediately, Blake. That's a lovely looking
enclosure. It sounds ridonkulous.
Why did you put pineapple on it, though?
I don't sully my good name on air like that. How dare you? So
it is a little deep dish, though.
Well, you gotta fit the circuit in there. I mean, I prefer it a little thinner, but
that looks more like a quiche than a pizza. But you don't have quiche in America.
I was
so
thinking
I think
cheesecake.
Okay.
It's kind of like cheesecake with pepperonis.
Wait. Did you say we don't have quiche in America?
We have quiche in America.
We have quiche.
Okay, yes. I just assumed that because every single food stuff I say to Brian, he refers to his chart that basically goes meat, peanuts, right. butter, yogurt doesn't exist. That's the Brian food stuff chart.
Yes, mm-hmm. yes, keep things simple. Yes.
Do you know what a quiche is, Bri?
Yeah, I've had it before. It's okay.
It's delicious.
So honestly, so this is going to offend some people, but in this section of Indiana, quiche is what a lot of people refer to as the upper class area of Indianapolis. They're like, oh, though that's what those people eat. We don't eat quiche in this.
That's
area.
Interesting. We had something similar over here when, like, football fans who paid for hospitality were called the Prawn Sandwich Brigade, as opposed to the people who stand in the stands now and drink beer and eat pies. Mm-hmm. So I get that. That's, yeah.
Yeah, we're mostly hot dogs and hamburgers with some peanut butter on the side. That's what we are.
Go for
area.
A prawn sandwich. That sounds good.
Yeah, I like sandwiches and I like prawns, but something about a prawn sandwich just isn't really hitting the spot for me.
No, it's like a mini lobster roll.
Prawn mayonnaise sandwich is a classic over here, but I hate prawns. They are the insects of the sea. I don't wish to eat them.
Give them bugs.
Oh, we need to change your opinion.
I've eaten a lot of seafood. I'm not a fan. Well, it's not.
You need to come down.
Anyway.
Come down to the south. We'll go to Louisiana. We'll get you some crawfish.
My trip to America's getting longer and longer by the days. I'm gonna have to be there for a year. I'm just gonna move there at this point. I'm gonna tell you guys how to have a guaranteed number one hit song, because I have read a book called The Manual by the KLF. But I'm going to have to leave it for Patreon because we are running over time on this. So
we are.
I'm sorry, regulars. If you want to know how to have a hit song as per the manual by the KLF, you're going to have to hit us up on Patreon.
And by the way, last Patreon, or the one that's dropping today, or dropping a week ago, is completely, totally geared on topic.
It is.
What?
Odd. Yeah.
Yes, oh,
it's
so strange.
So on topic. It literally is like the most on topic episode we've ever done.
The podcast, we actually didn't talk about gear at all that week. And then the Patreon was nothing but
we
gear.
Took like a deep circuit dive.
Oh, wow.
Right. We should flip the episodes, but we like to mix it up, listeners.
That's, you know, that's what I do on my podcast. I bring the guests on, and what I end up doing is where we talk the whole episode about everything else. And then I'm like, all right, if y'all actually wanted to hear about gear, we're over on the Patreon episode.
So before we jump
no
off
formal plans, we just do it by ear.
Yeah. Seat of our pants. But
yeah.
But before we jump off onto that, where can people find your show?
Oh, awesome. So you can find 40 Watt Podcast. That's my show, not 41, 40, number 40. You can find it on YouTube, 40 Watt Podcast. You can find it on your favorite podcast player. You can also find me on Instagram at 40 Watt Podcast. You can find me on TikTok at 40 Watt Podcast. All the things at 40 Watt Podcast. Do you know how hard it is to come up with a show name that doesn't suck? I mean, I missed the mark on that one, but is also not taken already. Ready? That's so hard. So all the things, I'm out there on all the social media because apparently I don't like sleeping at night. So I put things out everywhere. So check it out. Guys, I really appreciate y'all having me on. I still haven't figured out exactly what has happened to lower your standards to bring me on, but I really appreciate it. I mean, y'all went Daniel Steinhardt, Dovidas to me. I mean, I'm appreciating it, but this feels like a cry for help. So whatever it is, I'm here for you.
But and I'm actually going to text to Emily Wolf later to see if she wants to come on. So you're in a good sandwich.
I like it.
Yeah.
It's been a pleasure having you here, Philip, and I look forward to talking you over on Patreon in a minute.
Yeah, it's going to be a blast. Let's go.
So thanks for listening to the Chasing Tone podcast. As always, if you have any comments, questions, or concerns, you can email podcast@wamplerpedals.com and I'll personally get your email. To email Blake, email info@tonemob.com and Richard can be reached at richard@wamplerpedals.com. If you'd like to show your support for the show, the simplest and free way to do that is to share this podcast with a friend, leave a review and a rating wherever you normally get your podcasts, and check out Blake's podcast called The Tone Mob. And make sure to check out WamplerPedals.com for blogs, videos, and of course, guitar pedals. If you'd like to hear the post-podcast conversations and to get even more content, double actually, check out our Patreon at patreon.com/chasingtonepodcast. Also, very special thanks to Philip from 40 Watt Podcast for joining us. Thanks a lot, guys. Talk to you next week.